This episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real is sponsored by CISO. Comedy is experiencing a serious renaissance right now, and CISO is a comedy streaming service tailor-made for comedy lovers and nerds like us, with thousands of hours of the best comedy 24/7, 365. Go to CISO.com and stream for free today, no credit card needed.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great week for us.
It's always a great week for us.
Let me tell you something. We get a lot of emails, and most of them are good. Some of them are just, they're just tries. We get emails about, could we put people's new records on our website? And meanwhile, that's not the type of website we have.
No, we are not a, Not Right or Misinfo or RapRadar.
None of those. We only post our stuff. If you go to our website, you know who we are. There's pictures of us there. We've gotten emails. We've talked about this. People think that we're The Real, which is the syndicated women's TV show. This week, though, we got a complaint. And you know how I know it's a complaint?
Because it says so.
The subject line says complaint. Here's the message. Are you affiliated with The Real Real? Now, can you explain to the people what The Real Real is?
I don't know what The Real Real is.
The what?
What did I say?
The rur.
Yeah, I don't know what The Real Real is.
Well, The Real Real is a consignment shop online. So people can bring stuff that I suppose they bought and then sell it again.
So it's like a Salvation Army.
Yeah, or it's like illegal scamming.
Okay.
And they can, but this is like nice stuff that they want to sell. This is luxury items. Apparently.
It's that Real Real.
Apparently. Hit us up and said, I'm having a problem over them saying I owe them $20.90, which I don't owe them anything. This is an exact quote. They are emailing and will mess my credit up over this amount. Please help me with 2! Now, we have email here. How should we respond?
Hey,
good start.
How are you?
I like that.
I feel like we can help here.
Uh-huh.
Here's $20 and 95 cents. Yeah.
Oh, you're giving an extra 5 cents.
Well, you know, mailing.
Giving your extra 2 cents.
Yeah. Why, what would you say we do?
I say we ignore it.
Yeah, you're like, fucker credit.
I'm just curious as to why people go to our website with our dumb mugs posted all over it and figure that we are anything that we're not.
Well, she's asking if we are affiliated. I guess we could say no.
That's how we should respond.
Yeah.
No, sorry about your $20. No,
don't even like apologize for that.
Just
be like,
just
no. Yeah. You asked, we answered. Here's the facts. No.
So we went to Lenny S's birthday. Lenny S, as everyone knows, is JC's consigliere. He's Fabulous's manager. He manages DJ Khaled. Lenny S had a big birthday party at Up and Down on 14th Street here in New York, and we went down there, and Sus One, who is a DJ on Power 105, kept spinning great records and then interrupting them to be like, hey, when he jumps on the microphone, when Lenny S comes in the building, I want y'all to let me know. Between every record, he was jumping in like, when Lenny S gets in the building, let me know. I want to shout out Lenny S for his birthday. Let me know when he's here. Meanwhile, Lenny S had been there for like a half an hour already.
We should have told him, though.
Oh, that was our fault.
If you're looking for Lenny, he's the one with fire near his face. Lots of sparklers, lots of attention. There's cameras near him.
It's
his
birthday. You know who he is.
Yeah, he's right there. It's not that big of a space.
Right. Two things before we get into this podcast. People were really loving the Cypher Sounds episode that we put up last week.
Yes, people love that episode.
People loved the Pharrell story. People liked the Fat Joe stuff. People liked the Rick Ross and the Rihanna stuff. Good to hear from Cypher. Go check out No Small Talk, which is on Tidal right now. And we wanted to give a big shout out to Lior Cohen and his entire family. Lior is out of the hospital now, as seen on his snaps.
Yes, now he is back in the West Village where he can sit and he can espouse on everything Young Thug.
This week on the podcast, we have our friend and fellow podcaster,
Adam Grandmason.
All the way from Los Angeles, came to New York, had a bunch of media to do. He stopped by our place, and it was a really, honestly, enlightening and interesting conversation with a guy who has a crazy past.
Yeah.
So, but now he's doing an excellent podcast called No Jumper, which we guested on.
Yeah, we were there, what, like 2 months ago?
Yeah, our friend Stephen Barnett was there. Our friend
Jeremy Carellis was there.
That's right. It was good times. He has a downtown LA operation.
You make it sound like it's a syndicate.
Yes. He operates out of downtown LA. His store is called On Some Shit. It's a BMX and like, you know, bike shop.
Yeah.
Right?
BMX and bike shop.
BMX and bike shop.
Not only is it BMX, they also have bikes.
He has a really entertaining podcast.
Yeah, he's had everybody from Lil Debbie on there to Lil Yachty. All the Lils.
All every, the Lil, every... Lil David Drake.
Yes.
Lil David Drake, which you really liked that episode.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating.
If people are looking to find more It's The Real, Jeff, where can they go?
They can go on SoundCloud.com/A Waste of Time or on iTunes. If you search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real, we will come up probably anywhere you search for us. We are on Twitter at It's The Real. We are on Snapchat at It's The Real and It's The Real Eric. Come find us.
When do you want to get into this episode?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Defensive Rebound, a.k.a. Moving Bricks.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Mumble Young Man Mumble, a.k.a. Slime Stallone.
Wow, and it's Adam 22 from No Jumper.
Yeah, and this is A Waste of Time, this is The Real. Welcome to the Upper West Side.
Hey, it's very beautiful to be here. I realized today, like, in walking around between, like, Times Square and here, that I haven't spent a lot of time in Times Square, or in Midtown in general, in my life, because I lived in Brooklyn and Queens the whole time I was out here.
Right.
And whenever I come to the city, like, I would not come to the city very often, but then when I would, it would just be to ride BMX, so it was kind of nice to just sort of take things in today.
Have you ever been hit by a car?
Yeah, but it's been so long. I got hit super fucking bad. I think I like broke my tailbone and just had to deal with it for a few months, but I was like 17. Well, when you break your tailbone, you like chip it or whatever, and it just hurts, and you can't really do anything about it.
Really?
Yeah, because it's like, it's kind of pokes out back there.
You didn't get it like checked or anything?
No, even at that age, I knew better than to go to the doctor.
Right. Are you like an anti-vaxxer, like truther?
No, but I am like so opposed to going to the hospital or the doctor unless I absolutely have to. Especially
is that right?
In terms of, yeah, I've had so many like wounds that I should have had stitched up that I didn't, and like... I have all these like pieces of like cartilage stuck in my thumb and stuff still from like breaking a bottle on someone's head that just like the scar tissue just built up, and I never went to the doctor for it, which is a really bad
idea. Oh my
idea.
God.
Yeah, all of this sounds terrible.
Yeah, I was like the worst person ever. You guys haven't explained who I am at all.
Wait, okay, so you've probably been injured many, many times, right?
Yeah.
Different ways.
Many ways, yeah.
So I'm shocked that you would not want to go to a doctor.
Yeah, you're talking to two very sensible Jews.
Well, I've also never had health insurance like my whole life until like this year.
Congratulations.
So yeah,
thanks,
a very
Obama.
Big step. Yeah, thank you, Obama. Exactly. Yeah. It's been great. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't used it at all yet.
So you are actually in New York because?
Well, I was down at South by Southwest in Austin staying with my friend Charlie Kermlish and Kareem Williams trapping out there. And then... came up to Boston, Nashville, New Hampshire area to like see my my brand new nephew Teddy that my sister just had, and then
welcome
like
Teddy.
Shout out to Teddy. All he does is sleep. And then I had to come out here to do a meeting with like a couple of different companies out here. Hypebeast wanted to like just meet up and stuff. I'm doing some stuff with V-Files tomorrow.
A little light work.
Hanging out with you guys. Yeah, yeah. A little media tour. I feel like nice. You know, Dame Dash or something. Yeah.
Did you end up hitting up Tackstone?
I hit up, what's his name?
John Mena.
Yeah, I hit him up, and then I tweeted at him, and then he said to email him again, and then I kind of realized I wasn't going to be here that long anyway, so I didn't even bother to hit him up again. So Tackstone is, like, interview goals. Maybe when he's on the West Coast might be more feasible. I don't know.
Let's start at the very, very beginning. You are from Boston.
Well, I'm from Nashville, New Hampshire, which is about 30 minutes outside Boston.
So can you call it, like, the suburbs of Boston?
It essentially acts like that. I'm like, you know.
It's the same media market.
Yeah, right. It's the same. It's like I'm like a 2 to 5 minute drive from the Massachusetts border. So I've always like felt like a very close kinship with Massachusetts, maybe more than New Hampshire. But it's not technically part of Massachusetts, but so I do have to claim New Hampshire. But yeah, I'm from that area. It's like basically just like any generic New England town, to be honest.
Except you guys. You guys have the first primary, so...
We do, so there's a lot of attention on that. And that's why my father, who worked in, like, local politics in Nashville, like, he was on a school board, he was an alderman, and he ran for mayor at one point. But he was essential to running Bill Clinton's first campaign. Like, well, I can't say essential, but he was a big part of it early on. Like,
crazy.
So he knew him because he was always working on the Democratic side of things. And actually, I'm going to blow your mind right now, is that... So when my dad, like... when I was in, like, so 1995, 1996, my dad actually ended up going to jail for some white-collar crime shit, basically, because he was part of the city government, and then also he worked for a construction company, and there was, like, an accusation that he used his sway as the city government to get more jobs for his construction business. Long story short, he didn't really do anything. He really wasn't even in the position to do something. It was his boss who was guilty of this, but he ended up going to jail for a year for it anyway. And then when Clinton left office, he issued a presidential pardon to like 40 different people, one of which was my dad.
Whoa.
So, that's amazing.
As presidents tend to do when they leave office. And so, you know, it was cool. There was like another op-ed in the newspaper calling my dad a scumbag and everything. But I was just, no, that's tight, you know. I come from a long line of dudes who are willing to, you know. But it's funny because like I'm a scumbag. Yeah, kind of. But my dad is like so straight up that like even when he was in like the newspaper, like getting in trouble for this, like everybody kind of knew that it was like Phil Graham Mason would never do that, blah, blah, blah. So.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a weird thing.
You met Bill Clinton or?
Yeah, I met him plenty of times. I'm like, my sister has all these photos with Hillary and everything, but I can also say that my parents voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary, so they're feeling the burn.
It goes so far.
It's been so long that I think to them, it's like they don't feel any particular kinship. Yeah,
they barely remember being released from prison.
Yeah, exactly.
But that has to be an amazing moment to like be at the beginning of one man's rise and see him lead this country for eight years.
And I was
like
eight.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool, yeah. And at one point, he received oral sex from an intern, which I also thought was really cool.
Legendary.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Like, most presidents don't do that. Yeah. Obama, pussy, doesn't do shit, yeah.
Okay, so you grow up outside of Boston on the New Hampshire side. Mm-hmm. You're one of how many kids?
It's just me and my sister, who's like 3 years younger than me. So.
And she's got children.
She has two children and lives a very normal, ordinary, prosperous family life.
Was that always her track?
Yeah, like you couldn't pick somebody who was more like destined to have kind of like a traditional, like I remember when she got married to her now husband Josh, that he told my parents, like, ever since I was young, it was always my dream to have a family and to have children with like a girl as amazing as your daughter. And I remember hearing him say that and just thinking like, wow, I've never thought about that in my whole life. Like, what a great guy that I can't relate to at all.
Well, he's the father to your nephew.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I couldn't pick a better guy to be the father to my nephew. That being said, I just cannot relate to that mentality. I never have aspired to do something like...
You come from a long line of scumbags.
Well, you know, but the thing is that I don't really think... my dad is a good guy. Like, his dad was a good guy as far as I can tell. I think I was really kind of off the beaten path in terms of just being willing to, you know, fudge the law and such.
When did you start riding bikes?
I started riding bikes, like, so when I was 12, I got a mountain bike and was super into that for like 8 months, and then basically figured out I gave it up as soon as I got a BMX bike and realized that, like, that's where the real scumbags were, is like in my town or whatever. Because I hung out with these guys and I felt like I just got so exposed to so many more like sketchy people and stuff. These were just the scummiest guys in my town, and I would just hang out with them, and they're like probably partially responsible for everything bad that's happened to me in my life as well as everything good.
So we're two guys who, when we had mountain bikes and like, you know, the ones with like 10 speeds or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have any mountains to ride. It was, you know, we were riding like into town or something.
You
like
grew
that.
Up like right here?
No, just actually 30 minutes north of New York City.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, right.
Like
the
Nashua of New York City.
Right, yeah. That's
but
what,
for you maybe had real mountains to go mountain biking on?
Yeah, there was like dirt trails and stuff like that. But there was also like Nashua has like a real downtown area with a lot of good handrails and ledges and stuff like that. It is a real city. It's like 100,000 people.
But you can't do any rails with the mountain bike.
No, that's why I had to step it up to a BMX bike with pegs and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you went like full in?
I went full in to the point where, like, I got so obsessed with BMX so fast. I have, like, a really, like, obsessive personality to the point where it's, like, it's an issue. But I got so into it to the point where, like, I kind of lost track of, like, all my other friends, like, just was hanging out with BMX dudes, became so obsessed with BMX magazines and videos and everything like that. It just kind of took over my whole life, to be honest.
Did you know, what were the half of the Jackass guys went as, like, some crew in
CK.
CKY was the original videos. Yeah. Yeah, when there was still, like, more. Jackass was, like, once they went to MTV, they changed the brand name.
So
a little,
CKY, like.
And that influences a lot, too, just because Ryan Dunn would kind of, like, ride BMX. He'd be wearing, like, BMX company shirts sometimes. So there was a little bit of, like, crossover at that time, which was really exciting for us because BMX traditionally hasn't gotten that many, like, pop culture looks. But Jackass was dope, and, like, those guys would hang out with BMX guys. So we loved it back then, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that, like, a lot of people who would listen to this might be like, well, why would you put yourself in, like, these sort of situations?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Like, I think about that all the time when I see kids who are so willing to jump off buildings for no money, and I wonder why exactly they're doing it. And I think that I don't know, I saw BMX as like a vehicle that was kind of helping me see the world, as well as like a vehicle for like learning and progression in the sense that I had never really felt like I was good at anything. And then I started to ride BMX and I just started to get like positive affirmation from something that I could do all on my own. And I had never been talented at sports or anything. I wouldn't really say I'm like terribly talented at BMX, but it was entirely in my hands where I could kind of like fight against myself, as opposed to like, I never jived with the whole basketball, baseball thing. It just was.
But meanwhile, you're a tall guy.
Yeah, which is...
it's not like they make the bikes sort of like...
No, it's not ideal. It's not ideal to be tall. Everybody tall, you find that they have like excruciating back issues and such.
You well,
know?
You did hurt your tailbone.
Super
yeah.
fucked up back.
Also,
yeah.
girls with large breasts have back issues.
That's true.
Yeah. That's true. And that's why they should all get reductions or be sent to jail, yeah.
So you're riding around. And can we call these guys townies or are they just...
Yeah, totally. Their own townie is a good word for it. Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I say scumbag. Townie makes a lot
scumbag
of sense.
Scumbag townies. But what do your parents think of like your activities at this point?
Well, they were definitely disturbed by the fact that I was riding a bike with no brakes and that I wasn't wearing a helmet and that I was out till like 3 or 4 in the morning and that they kind of knew that.
How old were you?
Like 13, 14. Like, yeah, that was like my first time of really being able to kind of like escape and like when my parents kind of figured out like, oh, we can't tell him what to do. He's going to leave the house and we can't do shit about it, you know?
I feel like you've like, you're the type of person who's like jumped on a train and like gone somewhere, right?
You know, I used to do graffiti like super hardcore when I first got into BMX, and we would always talk about like jumping on one of the trains at the train yard in Nashua and like seeing where it went, but we never actually went through with it. But I really, really, really wanted to.
What was your tag? Can you say?
Own 33 was
own
my
OWN.
OWN and like then the number 33. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, 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 yeah. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. Yeah. I used to write that when I was like 14, 15. That was my name. There's probably still some lurking around there.
So own 33.
That was it. Yeah.
Was that also like your AOL screen name?
No, but I when I chose Adam 22 as my live journal name, which mm-hmm. is then the, how that became like my name, mm-hmm. it was there was absolutely nothing behind it, but it does stand out to me that my graffiti name had a 2-digit repeating numeral and that my live journal name, which then became my real nickname, did as well. Yeah. So I don't know if that's like a subconscious thing I have going on or what.
And together, 55.
Whoa.
True. I love palindromes.
Oh, do you really?
Love them, yeah.
Wow. Thank you.
Anytime like my Instagram follower count is a palindrome, I'm like much happier.
Yeah. Well,
you should screenshot it.
You should have it on private and just refuse to have people. I love that for the longest time. I don't know if he still does, but Currency's follower count was 420, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. See, I respect that. That's very.
Joe Mandy's is 666. Yeah.
If it's lower, if you're like 320, just buy yourself a quick 100K. Yep, yeah. Yep, that's how I would do it. Yeah.
So you're riding around town. What's the furthest that you would go on your BMX bike?
Oh, man, back then, like, we would pedal to places that were, like, 20, 30 miles away to ride. Like, when I think about the distances that we used to ride then, nobody that rides BMX would do this as adults or whatever. In California, nobody has any concept of riding 30 miles to, like, go ride a skate park. But it didn't seem that out of the ordinary to us at the time. It was such, like, a culture of, like, being hardcore, you know? Like, where it's like, oh, you're a pussy if you don't do this. And me being 13, 14, I'm like, all right, let's fucking do it. I'm not scared. Yeah, I'll do it. You know?
Did you fall to peer pressure in like a bunch of ways or no?
Well, see, the thing about all those dudes is that, well, sexually, yeah, because those are the first dudes that I knew who were like complete animals with girls, mm-hmm. which I definitely fell in line with. But they didn't drink or smoke or anything, so I kind of avoided that till like way later. I didn't mm-hmm. like start drinking or smoking until like early 20s.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah? No, yeah, I know. Me too, yeah. But I was like hardcore straight edge at the time, which was a lot cooler at the time. Like, I think you were probably cooler in like the New England, like kind of like BMX. You couldn't help but also kind of be in the hardcore scene, and everybody was vegan and straight edge back then.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird.
So did that translate to your music interest too?
Oh, totally. I'm super into like early hardcore and
like what bands?
Like Minor Threat. Oh god, no way. No, because they were like a Christian band, so I couldn't fuck with them like ideologically at all. But I was super into
I had no idea about that. I was just like, really? I just knew like the letters.
No, they're like extreme like pop punk. I was like super into like early hardcore, like Minor Threat and Youth of Today and like stuff like that. But then
Bad
also
Brains, is that a thing?
Bad Brains were like DC era from the same time. But then also I was super into like Blood for Blood and Death Before Dishonor and Madball and all this like tough guy, like East Coast hardcore shit that was like kind of the types of bands that were playing like when I was actually like able to go to shows in like the late 90s, early 2000s.
And do you jump right in the mosh pit?
Oh, yeah. Like I got multiple concussions like back in the day just from not knowing what the fuck I was doing.
For sure.
Oh, for sure. Like horrible concussions. Yeah. I've had more from BMX.
Again, you haven't gone to a doctor, so.
Yeah, there could be all kinds of stuff going on here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you jump in the pit and just are thrown around? And by the way,
man, I don't know. Yeah.
So you've experienced that. You've lived that. You've gone through concussions. Do you consider that, like a lot of people do, like an expression of love or whatever? They're like, oh, this is just, you know, you jump in the pit and like shoving people around and down.
Oh, absolutely not.
It's amongst friends.
In Boston at the time, it was the most violent hardcore scene probably anywhere, especially at that time. And I mean, no, there was no, like, it's like, if they would always say, like, in LA, if you fall down in the pit, a bunch of people are going to help you up. And in Boston, if you fall down, somebody's going to jump on your head. So there's a documentary called Boston Beatdown 2 that I guarantee, like, almost everybody watching this will not have the patience to sit through. But it is like just all these dudes who are like the most hardcore of the hardcore dudes just talking into the camera about how tough they are and about their brotherhood and their friendship and like the most brutal fight footage to go along with it. And it's weird too, because it's all white guys, and you're just not used to seeing like gang violence in America modern times, and it's all white boys, and it was just insane. But that was like the template for the time, like fucking people.
Wait, that's a documentary, not like
that they made.
But it's not like a world star film. Like, it sounds like the two next to it.
Oh no, it's like it's like more world star than it is like, because yeah, I mean that is even like a touchy like era to talk about, because that documentary is what got a lot of guys in the Boston scene on the radar of like the FBI,
right.
And then they ended up getting their whole shit shut down to the point where like the Boston hardcore scene, I'm told, is like really lacking now because the FBI got involved. All of a sudden, like, just the whole scene got fucked up, I guess.
As far as movies go, is Boston Beatdown 2 better than Boston Beatdown 1?
Boston Beatdown 1 was kind of like the template for 2. 2 was where they really hit their stride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I don't think 3 ever happened.
Right. Just like The Godfather.
Like, yeah, it's like Coke Boys 3.
Yeah.
I love that Jeff is such a hardcore Coke Boys fan, which I have to say that the tape with Max B, that's the first French tape that I've downloaded in a few years, and it is awesome.
It's so good.
Wave Gods.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one with
Kodak Black is
amazing. That song is phenomenal.
Song. Yeah.
And the Kanye song I really like a lot too, but there's just a lot of good songs in there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've been listening to that pretty much nonstop for the past, I don't know, ever since it came out.
And I love New York because I was like walking through Central Park and heard like multiple different people blasting that mixtape, and that is not something that you would necessarily encounter in LA that often. Yeah.
Also, walking, not something you're gonna
walking. Not a lot of that in LA. Yeah.
No, it's the Hasidic Jews, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You go through high school and you're finding trouble, or are you?
Oh yeah, I was in trouble so fucking much, like just fighting in school constantly, and like that was kind of a weird thing, like with the BMX crowd that I fell into, is like that was the first time that I really felt like, oh, here's all these like big older dudes who have my back against like all these fucking football dudes that want to fight me, or like, you know, like I got in so many fucking fights in high school. I got suspended so many times. I was looking at my like high school yearbook, and there's not a single photo of me outside of like the one photo of me like sitting against the wall or whatever, and I was just thinking, like, I'm pretty sure that I was blacklisted from the yearbook intentionally,
man.
Because, and I remember there was a school trip, and my dad was all bummed that I wasn't allowed on it because I've been suspended too many times. So
where was the school trip to?
I don't,
it was 20 to 30 miles away.
Probably you had to pedal there.
Yeah. Shown up. Yeah. Were there any of those kids who you got into fights with who you later like reconciled with, and you're like, you know what?
Yeah,
have a different mind.
There's like one situation that stands out to me really bad where I got the reason why I stopped doing graffiti, because I had like really bad luck. I got caught like 2 different times
you
in the course
owned.
Of a year. I got owned. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. That was good. I got arrested like 2 different times, and like the second time, basically I kind of had it in my head like, all right, I'm going to change my life. I'm not doing graffiti anymore. I'm not going to be in trouble anymore. I go to school the next day, that Monday, and this fucking dude just walks up to me and just starts punching me in the face like repeatedly. Yeah, and like I was so in the zone of like, oh, I'm going to clean up my act, that I'm just standing there like getting punched in the face, screaming at him like, fuck you. What the fuck is wrong with you? You know?
Oh my God.
And it was all because like I had made some joke to his girlfriend that she had then like said to him and completely took out of context.
Snitch.
Yeah, she's a snitch, right? Yeah. I don't remember her name. I don't remember him. Yeah. Well, I mean, I got punched in the face mad times. I didn't really get hurt. I was just yelling at him. And then I remember that like a couple years later, like there was like a party after graduation, and that kid said to me, he's like, yo, I'm sorry, I know I was in the wrong on that, like, and he was like, punch me in the face, do it right now. And I'm like, I'm not gonna do it, like, I'm down to be cool with you, that was 2 years ago, but I'm not gonna punch you in the face. And it was like one of those drunk things where he just kept telling me like, punch me in the face, fucking do it. And I never ended up doing it, but that would have been tight.
Yeah.
I probably should have done it. Yeah, because it's a weird feeling getting punched like 10 times in the face in a row and just standing there and taking it. But my resolve at that point to get my life together was so strong that I was so with it.
Well, and did it take
it took for a couple years until I like graduated high school and started scamming. And that was, then it went downhill for a while. But then a couple years after that, I cleaned up my act again. That didn't really take either. It took for a while.
And we'll get there. Yeah. The end of high school.
It's a noble fight, by the way.
That's right. The end of high school, like, are you working a job anywhere?
No, I got into a really lucky situation where like a friend of my dad's that he had met when he was in jail, this guy, Clem Izzy. Clem Izzy was just this guy who basically had like a big ass house. And he told me that he wanted me to work for him, like doing like landscaping type stuff, like cleaning up the leaves, mowing the lawn, whatever. And he was like kind of a rich guy who was sort of out of touch for what the average wage was. So he was paying me $20 an hour in like 2001 to do like remedial lawn work, and he didn't care how many hours I billed him for. I could bill him for whatever I wanted. He just liked me.
That landscaping bubble, you know?
Yeah. No, it really was. Yeah, like, and I for years after that, I would hear people talk about how much they were getting paid to do like similar stuff, and I'd be like, man, that was such a fucking good deal. But I was doing that for a while, and So I never really like had a job after like 17, 18, and because I was doing that for him, but really not like making that much money because I was only doing it the minimal amount that I had to, you know.
Did you have a car?
Yeah, my parents gave me like a super old Buick Regal like when I turned like 17, so I was whipping that thing around. Nice. Yeah, and they will forever like torture me for the fact that I just fucked it up by like strapping bikes onto the trunk and stuff. Like, yeah, I remember my dad always says like, because when they went to like, I went away on a trip, and then they cleaned the car out so my sister could use it for the week, and they found like 78 Poland Springs bottles in my trunk, and they were just so offended that there would be 78 bottles in my trunk, and I just, you know, I drank a lot of water. Fuck, like I said, yeah.
You were there to get the 5 cents or whatever.
Yeah, right. Well, I didn't think of that, but that was a good point, yeah.
Is New Hampshire one of those places where you can turn
actually,
in
actually, wait.
It is, I think.
I know that Michigan, maybe. You can't.
Michigan, isn't it 10 cents? Ooh. We're all thinking back to that Seinfeld episode, right?
Yeah,
that's our sole basis of knowledge on this topic, yeah.
What did your sister think of everything you were up to?
I mean, her being such like a person who got straight A's and went to college in the state where I grew up and everything. I mean, her and I have always like stood in very stark contrast, so it's always like been interesting. I don't know that she really had that much of an opinion about it, but I mean, her life went on like a pretty linear track and mine just kind of went off the rails for a while. But my parents never really like knew about anything sketchy that I was getting into until all that stuff was over for me. So I wouldn't say that they were super worried, but maybe kind of suspicious.
Was it something where like you were able to talk about it later on and just laugh about with your parents?
Well, I know that they listen to like, they read interviews and stuff where they probably see stuff.
And that's how they found out?
Probably, to be honest. It was so long ago that I think that they probably aren't even surprised. They probably knew I was up to something at that time, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
That's pretty great to discuss it like Thanksgiving. Like, just like, oh, about
my,
what you were up
my
to.
My mom and dad have always been really good at ignoring the bad things that I'm into. Like,
are they white Anglo-Saxon Protestant?
Yes. And, well, yeah. Actually, exactly. Correct. Yeah. And they've always kind of just managed to like sort of ignore like when I would do an interview and I'd mention stuff like that, any kind of criminal activity. They just always kind of ignored it. I don't know. They were good at that.
You had picked up for graffiti, and what were the cops like? Like, is graffiti a big thing in Nashua? Or surrounding
Yeah, because
towns.
It's like, what the fuck else do they have to deal with? And I remember still, my friend Corey Vengren is the one who got us all caught because we were behind this building painting, and he didn't have any paint, so he fucking goes and gets a sub at Subway and then comes back and is just sitting there watching us paint, and then 20 minutes later, the cops show up with fucking guns pulled and arrest all of us, and that was fairly horrible, yeah.
Guns pulled
because a couple of them tried to run, so there's they pulled their guns out. I don't know.
But you know
graffiti artists, they're very violent.
Yeah, he was like, the cop was like 2 feet away from me, so I didn't even bother to try to run, but man, the other guys tried to run and it was strange. Yeah.
End of high school, you go to graduation. What was next?
Well, my parents convinced me, because I really didn't have any kind of aspirations in life at this point besides going to hardcore shows, fucking girls off MySpace, and riding BMX. My parents kind of told me, because like they were probably genuinely scared about what was going to happen to me in my life. They told me, like, if you, because I got really lucky, because my mom is a librarian at a state school in Massachusetts.
Oh, so she wanted you to follow in her footsteps.
She wanted me to be a librarian. Yeah, couldn't you imagine? I'd be really good at that. Because I always tell her that her job is just to go shh, shh, and she gets super offended. Because like, if you're a modern day librarian, is very into like, you know,
cataloging,
research,
I mean,
and like how to use the internet,
the world wide web.
She was like, Adam, that is a stereotype.
Yeah, exactly. Because I would always say, oh, mom, all you know how to do is use the Dewey Decimal System. It's the Library of Congress, you idiot. But Yeah, so they convinced me basically, like, you can go to college without having to pay tuition because I'm a employee of a state school, so you should just do this. And they basically said, like, we won't force you to get, like, a full-time job, and you can continue to do the landscaping thing if you go to college. So I went to college and got straight A's, which is weird because I got all, like, D's all through high school. But I killed it in my first year at community college, and then after that, I went to UMass Lowell for a year.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was about the time when I got into doing scams, basically. And that was basically where I just lost any interest in school. And that was when I dropped out.
What do you mean by scams?
And credit card fraud and shit. I like how they call it scamming now because it sounds less fucked up than like identity theft.
Right. Yeah. Also, it's just easier to fit into a rap song.
So. Right, scamming. Yeah. Because we're all thinking about Panda right now. Yeah.
Did you see Designer in South by Southwest?
I did not. And that would be very strange to see him in real life. I like the idea of him on the internet more than real life.
Yeah, do you know what he looks like at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah. I watched videos of him performing the song live, like the day that the Kanye album came out. I like searched online and it was so weird. Yeah.
A friend of ours at Def Jam, I was like, does Designer have anything else besides Panda? And he was like, he has a lot of songs that are going to be hits. And so I guess there's something there. I mean, people are excited.
I've heard a lot of artists who had a lot of hits, but then they themselves were the issue, is that they maybe didn't have the charisma to be that dude.
Very true.
Maybe he could be that dude. I don't know.
We'll see.
Maybe he'll be our new Ace Hood.
Wow, I would love an Ace Hood. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
I mean, listen, Ace Hood, as much shit as I give Ace Hood, Ace Hood had hit after hit after
right.
hit. Like every year,
he also had style and lyrical style.
Like,
yeah, flows, and he didn't dress like especially
like
well.
He wore a wife beater.
But his lyrical style put so many people on.
Oh yeah, like, totally. Just, but then like you look at him and it's like, well, you're still Ace Hood. So is anybody gonna really care about you? Are they gonna buy the album?
And the answer is no.
And he had pre-Snapchat Khaled in his corner, which is. Maybe things would be a little different now.
Yeah.
I was also curious.
I mean, like, he was also wearing, like, Cisco pants. So, I mean, like, that was, like, the issue.
Well, you guys are, like, experts on the DJ Khaled Snapchat. That apparently, too. But have you ever seen Ace Hood on the Khaled Snapchat?
No.
Well, and also, that's telling. That's very telling.
But you know what? I did interview Khaled, a year ago?
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, like, you know, what was going on with Ace Hood. And then he's still very, like, you know, championing him and everything.
I'm sure.
So, like,
you remember a classic Khaled moment that we should probably go find on YouTube is, remember there was a BET segment where they had, like, 10 albums out. And it was, like, put these in this bag if you think it's a classic, and Get Rich or Die Tryin' was on there, and he was like, I can't put that in the bag because I'm all about unity, I'm all about love and respect, so I can't put that in the bag. Now don't get me wrong, this has hits, but I can't put it in the bag. Something like that. I gotta go find that.
Yeah,
that's
amazing. I think in his head his morals are so set and it's hard for him to translate that a lot of the time.
Well, that was about the time that 50 was going in on Fat Joe and this is when Khaled was still rocking the TS chain nonstop.
Yeah. Totally. You know. And now Fat Joe and 50 are friendly.
I seen that, and I seen that, now Khaled's rocking the Rock Chain.
He is.
Which is T.S., Fat Joe, and Jay-Z.
That's right.
Longstanding beef, probably still,
from,
but nobody gives
from
a fuck.
From the Rucker days and all that, too.
Right, yeah.
Okay, back to scamming.
To me, yeah.
How did you get introduced to it?
There was a sketchy-ass Czech kid. Czech, like Czechoslovakian.
I thought it was like, your thing was credit cards, his
That
thing.
Is a good point. Yeah. I never thought about that till right now. But he basically like knew about, like,
by the way, we love homonyms, you love palindromes.
Yeah, I do.
Like, the kid was like, catch me if you can. Like,
he was like, But basically, like, he knew that, like, I had some sketchy ass friends who were super into shoplifting and stuff, and he like got in touch with me basically like, yo, I got a way that you guys can make some real money. I go and meet up with him in another town in New Hampshire, and he takes me to the mall, and he had already told me how this works, but he had all these credit cards, and he's like, all right, take this, go into like this store and buy a laptop, and like was basically watching me from a distance to see like how good I was at like maintaining the facade of this being my actual credit card and everything. I did it. We did it a couple times, like in the same day. We're buying flat screens, all this shit, and then he takes me out to Red Lobster, which was really cool of him, and that was also on this credit card.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
cool to a point because he's not paying for it.
Well, that was great. Yeah. Neither of us was paying for it, but it still felt like he was taking me out. And I remember like that first day that he handed me like $3,000 in cash, and I had never had $3,000 in cash in my whole life. And I was like, okay, I'm on this. Like, and the deal was like 40% of the profits to me and like 60% to him, which I was still super down with. But then I had this other friend who was like even way sketchier and smarter than me. So I like brought him into the fold. But then, like, so we were off working with this kid within a couple of months because we figured out how to do it all on our own. you would go on these like sketchy ass websites or whatever and just buy all these fake credit card accounts, and then we would just go drive 2 hours north to some mall and just tear it up and then just come back with like crazy amounts of money and stuff. And we were going hard with this for a couple of years.
So is it that you would buy the merchandise and then sell it again, or you would buy the merchandise and then return it?
No, you would buy it on the credit cards and then you would like either sell it yourself slowly over time on eBay, or we would have like a fence who we would sell it to, and he would just give you like a percentage of the profits up front.
Gotcha.
So you can kind of remove yourself from that deal. And I assume that it's like a million times harder now, because I know that like it's probably a lot harder to just open an eBay store selling a shitload of like unaccounted for merchandise these
sure,
days.
Sure.
But at the
Let's
time,
find out. What are you guys doing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm super down. But that's what's weird.
By the way, of course you're super down.
Well, when I hear Tax like talk about it, and he's talking about how there's so many scammers, like I wonder where they're scamming exactly, because it must be like real high security if it's that common in New York.
You should talk to your Czech friend.
I actually really crazy thing about that, and I always forget to talk about this, is so I was working with him. I basically kind of resolved, like, I'm not going to do this scamming shit anymore when I moved to New York, because New York was already kind of hot in comparison to New England. So I'm like, I don't really want to still be doing this shit here. I already had enough money to, like, last me a few years. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to, like, move to New York and figure out what I want to do. And
that's the plot of Girls, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people tell me I'm very, like, Lena Dunham-esque. Yeah. But so as soon as I move, like, there was another dude that was the dude that got my Czech friend into this shit, like, at a young age. And basically, like, that dude hit up my Czech friend and was like, yo, like, do you want to meet up with me and, like, do, like, I'm sorry for, like, the way business went in the past, but I want to, like, we'll go and we'll do some scamming together. They go out and do it. They buy, like, a bunch of TV. The first TV they buy, they walk out of the store afterwards, and fucking federal agents rush in and throw the Czech kid on the ground. The other kid gets to walk away, and so he's like laying on the ground outside this mall looking up and realizing that that fool had set him up. This is like 3 weeks after I moved to New York, so realistically I probably would have been there when this happened. And the really crazy thing about it is, I said he's a Czech kid, he gets kicked out of America for life for that.
Whoa.
He still lives in fucking Canada, so
crazy,
can't come back.
But Canada is, like, popping right now.
Canada's tight, so he's probably not that pissed about it. But, I mean, you know, he can't come back to see his parents. That's got to kind of suck.
That could have been you.
Not then from America, probably, because definitely, the like, because he went to jail for, like, a year or two in America before he got kicked out. So that definitely could have been me. Yeah.
And
so,
whatever happened to that kid who set him up?
I don't know. Probably living happily ever after in the witness protection program or something. Probably not witness protection.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, he's sort of serious, probably had a better
maybe
path.
Like in Arizona, just like with his name and everything.
Right.
Him and Whitey Bulger in Santa Monica or something.
That's right. Yo, that's wild, though.
That was so wild. And I always kind of took that as like a little sign, like, okay, that's, I got to clean up my act from here, which I did not do. But,
well, you know.
But it's a noble, like,
it was a good attempt. Yeah, I tried hard.
But what brought you down to New York, though?
I had like a friend who had like a super cheap, like it was a $600 two bedroom in Astoria, which doesn't make any sense, right? Like,
not today it doesn't.
Not today, but in 2003 this was still plausible. He basically, like, I kind of wanted to move to Boston and like hang out with all my hardcore friends out there and ride BMX, and he basically convinced me that it would be like a total like pussy cop out move. He's like, you got to go 100%. You got to move to New York.
Oh my God. This is like the end of Good Will Hunting. Like,
He was like, you cannot move to Boston.
Like
He's like, you know, Boston is soft. Like, it's easy out there. It's too close to home. You got to move to New York. I just really wanted to like kind of make a name for myself filming BMX videos and stuff, which did not really pan out for me because of the fact that I got injured really bad, and that's when I started playing online poker, which I did really well with for a few years.
Okay, so
there's a lot of information there, by the way.
First of all,
let me trapping.
Where did you keep your cash?
Cash. That was a weird thing that I would always like try to like think of different places that you could hide it in the house and shit, but I don't know. Whenever I watch like cops or when they're like ripping up a house, it doesn't seem like there's anywhere that you could hide anything that the cops aren't going to find if they search your house.
Right.
So I never got like that. I remember like at my parents' house that I had this like old laser tag box from when I was in like eighth grade that they bought me for like Christmas or something. And I just had the box, and the box was just filled with every bad thing, like spray paint cans, cash, drugs, everything. Because even when I was straight edge, I was still selling drugs.
Okay.
I just want to throw that out there. That's like a time honored Boston tradition, just for the record. Because I seen like this one straight edge do this like in a popular straight edge band, and he just got busted driving 70 pounds of weed across America. And I was just thinking, I'm glad that the straight edge scene is
That's
still
right.
serving themes.
But your parents, you know, they would never look in that
No, exactly. Yeah.
Laser tag.
Well, what if they were like, oh, you want to know what? Perfect day for some laser tag.
Yeah. I would have been fucked. Yeah. They would have opened that. It's like Pandora's box of like every bad thing you can imagine.
We had Yo Gotti on the podcast and we asked him where he hid his money. And he was like, I bought this house and like had a contractor come in and break through the wall. And then he like patched it up and everything was cool. And then he's like, I couldn't sleep that night because I was afraid that that contractor knew exactly where it was.
Wow.
So I broke it open
had
again.
Had the contractor killed.
Yeah. But he like got the money out and like had the contractor redo the wall and then hid it somewhere else.
Wow.
Yeah. He was just like,
Yo Gotti was in the chair where I'm sitting right now.
He was. That
is or very, it might be in the other chair.
I'm very honored.
Oh, yeah. There is another chair.
Shit,
yeah.
Look at that thing lonely over there.
You should just, after this is done, you should sit in all the chairs. So at least one of them, Yo Gotti sat in. Big thanks to our friend CISO for sponsoring today's show. Go to CISO.com to stream the original series, The UCB Show. Catch all 8 episodes of pure sketch comedy gold featuring the comedy stars of tomorrow and your longtime UCB favorites as well. Remember, CISO is only $3.99 a month and ad-free. So, try it now for free. Join now as a guest to access this extensive comedy collection, no credit card needed. Look, Jeff, I love that you can watch the entire Monty Python series, including Holy Grail, Life of Brian, and The Flying Circus, totally remastered into HD for the first time. The full Kids in the Hall catalog, entirely remastered into HD for the first time as well. Plus, every single episode of Saturday Night Live.
And CISO is also releasing over 40 new shows and stand-up specials from people like Cameron Esposito, Dan Harmon, Scott Aukerman, Jonah Ray, and more. CISO for yourself for free right now only at CISO.com.
You started playing online poker because you got hurt.
Yeah, so I kind of like had all this energy of like, oh, what am I going to do? I got hurt super bad riding BMX where I just like threw my back out and couldn't ride for a few months, and I'd always been interested in poker. So I put like $200 into a fucking online account.
It was a very big laser tag box.
I had like $200 I put into the account like through MoneyGram or whatever, and then like ran it up to like $100,000 in like a year.
What?
And then just kept going hard with it for like a few years that I was like probably averaging 6 figures, and then just kind of kept going with that for a while.
Were you good at poker? Were you like cheating in some way?
It was a very ripe time for poker on the internet in like 2003, 2004.
Yeah, well, that was when everybody was like, oh, I can play poker.
Exactly. So there was tons of fish with tons of money to go around, and that doesn't really exist anymore from what I'm told. So I'm glad that I got out of that. Yeah.
Is there any way to sort of trick all the other people that you're playing there? Because...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you would hear all the time about dudes, because it wouldn't be that hard for me and you to both be playing online poker different places and be texting each other or DMing each other or whatever, letting each other know what we had. But the thing is that their software is able to, like, detect that, like, if you've got quad kings and I've got quad aces and you fold, it's like the software would presumably detect that and know that you're acting irrationally.
Right.
But, I mean, people probably still got away with it all the time. I never really dove into that, although I would have loved to.
I like the people who are, like, experts at cheating the system, and then, like, the system ends up buying them out, and they become, like, a consultant, you know.
I like the idea that I wish that I could have somehow done that.
Well, that's Catch Me If You Can again.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. It's all Catch Me If You Can.
That's fucked up. Yeah.
So you played online poker, and this whole time, is your family, like, you get together at Thanksgiving, are they just like, so...
Well,
what do you
The online poker thing probably didn't make them feel that safe about my future, but at least it was plausible. At least there was something that kind of made sense, because around the same time too, I was like, you know, New York drug prices at the time, we had it popping, and like where I'm from, they did not have it popping price wise. So I was like driving a lot of drugs back to the East Coast, doing these little trips and stuff. So that was fun, and it was just like extra income on top of the poker stuff, you know. So I was doing pretty good in that regard at the time too.
By the way, New Hampshire drug scene now is like,
wow. Oh yeah, I would be in the heroin game for sure if I was back then, because I hear about it all the time, people dying and shit. But we were just doing stuff with coke at the time, buying in Jersey City and just sort of driving it around. I'm so glad that this is like 12 years behind me so I could talk about it, like, because it still kind of feels like, fuck, like, are the cops going to care about this? Do they listen to a waste of time with It's the Real? Bow, bow, bow. Have you noticed that I have a Hennessy phone case that I was given at South by Southwest?
Shout out to that.
Yeah, I should be being paid for this.
I do like the idea that that South by Southwest is just to the point now where like everything they give away is free and like...
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to go to like the Doritos tent.
That's right.
To watch, like, you know.
Yeah. But I got this, and like he handed it to me, and I'm like, this is better than my current phone case. So what am I like? What am I holding out for? Like, a non-branded phone case?
We don't even.
We
live
on the edge. Talk about you living.
You got
on
a
the
doorman
edge.
Too. Yeah. What? Yeah. What?
Life is good in hip hop sketch comedy. Yeah. See, that's my thing. We go down to Thanksgiving, and it's a lot of like, you know,
right.
Relatives don't understand what we do. Right. Did your parents know that you were living as well as you were living?
No, because I never lived like that, even when I had like a lot of fucking cash.
Just like an American Gangster. This is
it was just
bringing up movies.
Or Goodfellas, like, you know what happens when you wear your like mink out.
But
like,
I also just, I don't have taste for anything nice. So it's like, I had a lot of money, but I'm not into cars. I'm not into like clothes. I'm not into anything. So what was I going to do? Yeah.
But this whole time, are you still like paying $600 for your place in Astoria?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, never felt the need to give up on that, because like my mentality at that age in particular was, I just don't want to work. Like, I don't want to fucking have fancy things. I just never want to have to work again. Because,
amazing.
Yeah, so that's like my mentality. I was like, oh, if I got 100 grand, I'm saving the 100 grand because that's going to last me 5 years or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Which luckily, like, other things worked out, but at the time that seemed like really...
You would have done very well in the Great Depression.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's like how my parents are. They nothing nice ever. Never had a nice car. Never had nice clothes. They're just not those kind of people, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you see our apartment, and it is too nice.
It is too nice. Well, yeah. There was a girl in Austin back in the day that like I remember she called me and said like, "Hey, so when you lived in Brooklyn, like, did you have a doorman?" And me and my friends like ridiculed her for asking that because we thought it was so funny because I didn't know anyone with a doorman, and then I showed up here and you guys are a doorman.
Well. Our doormen really are the best.
You want to live in the upper East Side?
Upper
West Side.
I would never live on that upper East Side.
I know.
Yeah. No, our doormen are awesome. We've had the same doorman for, I guess, like 8 years, basically, pretty much. There used to be another doorman who didn't know anybody's name except for Eric.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, this girl who I went to high school with, she also lived with us, and she would come down, and I would come down, and he'd be like, "Eric, what's going on?" And it's like, "Well, no, I'm Jeff."
Yeah.
She's not Eric.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I am.
So I have a little mnemonic device with you guys. I just kind of have like a little like melody in my head that's like, Jeff is tall, Eric is small. Jeff is tall, Eric is small. That way I can remember, because it's hard to separate, because in my mind, you guys share a Twitter account. You were like the same being for a long time.
Yeah.
We were at a photo shoot the other day, and someone was just like, "Is it Jeff?" And it's just like, "Look, just remember glasses and curly hair." That's
right.
You know,
that is actually even more simple.
Call
that's
us
a good point.
What
yeah.
you want? You know? Okay, so you're living in New York. You're living how you're living.
Mm-hmm.
Are you're back riding at this point?
Yeah, but like casually for fun. And around that time when I was playing poker too, like after I got over that one injury, I just had such like a rash of horrible injuries because I basically like. I like broke my ankle and my leg at the same time riding BMX, which was like just horrible luck.
That
and
sounds horrible.
It was awful.
How did you do that? Did you like run into a shark?
Okay. This is what's really fucked up about it is that I had a friend, like it was like the first day of spring. I was back in Boston for a little bit. I met up with all my friends. We went to Boston. Right away, we see this like rail hop, which is, you know, it's like the height of your handlebars. You got a bunny hop over it. There's like a bank. My friend went to do it. Cases the rail hop, goes straight to his face, knocks a bunch of his teeth out. Like, we had to rush him to the hospital. Just so happens that in Boston, the hospital is one of the greatest BMX spots of all time. Not just in Boston, but anywhere. So we're messing around outside of the hospital. I go to do a trick on this bank. I fall. I fucking destroy my leg to the point where, like, then my friends had to, like, basically wheel me in on my bike. And my friend who had just knocked his teeth out is looking at me like, "Are you fucking serious?"
Oh.
Like, it's so statistically improbable. I don't know if, like, him getting hurt just sort of trauma was in the air. I don't know.
By the way, you know what's turned me off? About as much as like the injuries and like the fear of death, I guess.
Yeah.
The terminology.
Right.
I find it very forbidding.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Because I just said cased the rail hop. Yeah. That probably sounds weird to you, right?
Yeah, like that's a thing that we all know.
Well, you know, the lame
casing.
Joke that people always do is like, "Oh, you're going to need a lawyer for that case." So if you ever go to the skate park and if you see something that kind of looks like someone's casing something, you could just be like, "You're going to need a lawyer for that case," from the outside of the skate park, and they'll all laugh. They'll love it. They'll love you. But you want to know another good story? At the time that like I broke my hand really bad because my sister was dating this BMX kid that I didn't really know because he's like a few like generations a few years younger than me. I didn't really know him. And so I was back home visiting my parents, and my dad wakes me up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Basically, that kid that she had been dating came by my parents' house, to like pick up something, and when he picked it up, like, because they weren't home, they said like you could just come in and grab it, because like some places in New Hampshire don't lock their doors, at least at that time. Now my parents are very strict about locking the door. Mm-hmm. But he stole $500 out of my dad's wallet.
What?
Yeah, which is weird that my dad carries $500, right? But also just...
I'm so glad that he's not the one who ended up marrying your sister, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Me too. This guy's a total scumbag. Yeah, yeah. Josh, much cooler guy. Yeah.
It is clear that that guy cased the joint.
Hey.
Exactly, Jeff.
I'm using it correctly.
So my dad like wakes me up and was basically like, you got to go handle this. I'm like, all right. I'm on like 1 hour sleep. My dad lets me take his other car. I go out like basically just hunting for this dude all day.
What is your weapon? Oh, no, you have your hands.
Yeah. I was just going to fuck him up. So I fucking...
It wasn't like you had a wrench.
Yeah, and I got like a tip because my sister, like this dumbass kid, told my sister like basically where he was staying before this.
What an idiot.
Yeah, so fucking... He tells her, so I show up at the house, and his bike is in the front yard, so I'm super happy. I take the bike, throw it in the car, because no matter what happens, I'm keeping this bike.
That's collateral, yeah.
I knock on the door. The girl comes out. She says, like, oh, like, how can I help you? I'm like, oh, is the kid's name is Adam. I'm like, oh, is Adam here? She's like, yeah, do you want to come in? I'm like, nah, you can just send him outside. He comes outside. I'm like, yo, give me my fucking dad's money. I'm going to fucking kill you right now. He starts lying, saying they didn't do it or whatever. So I just like haul back and just punch him in the fucking... Like he moved his head at the last second, which is that's what did me in, is that like my pinky hit him in like the temple instead of like my front two fingers. So I have this like really bad boxer's fracture in my hand that I got from that one. But it was weird because like you're in that like adrenaline fueled moment where you're beating the shit out of somebody. And I like realized in my head, I'm like, why am I hitting him with my left hand? And then I like punched him in the face with my right hand. I'm like, oh, right. Okay. Yeah, my right hand is broken now. I need to deal with this. Yeah. So.
The last thing that you yelled before you hit him was Adam's here.
Adam's home. Yeah.
By the way, we've lived very different lives.
I feel like a lot of times I feel like people tell me like, you have the craziest stories of any white person I know, and I'm like, that means a lot to me. Like, I really appreciate that.
Living in New York, the riding's got to be way different than it is in Nashua, in Boston, anywhere.
Oh, totally,
right?
Yeah. New York is like just a scene unto itself. Like this, it's just a completely different crowd. Like everybody I grew up riding with was white. Everybody who rides BMX in New York is pretty much black or Hispanic, at least at that time. And it was fucking, I mean, you got to understand that like I moved out of New England to New York because of like dudes like Edwin De La Rosa, Vinny Salmon, Vic Ayala, like the whole Animal BMX scene. Like that was like the company Animal, and they were basically just running the scene. And like I had a full on like fetish for riding like public parks like in New York. Like it just seemed so cool, and it just seemed like everybody was out there just having so much fun all the time. And Union Square was like the hub for it. Like you could go to Union Square. Yeah, there's still a shitload of BMX to skate there every night. But I would go there and like see all these top pros who were there just riding and just hanging out. So it was like the best scene that I could have ever hoped to be a part of at that time, and it was just phenomenal for me. Yeah.
Did you ever consider the idea of professional riding in terms of like all those guys who go the X Games path?
Nah, because I was never like that good at riding, and I was never that good. I was never that interested in sort of like the. I was never interested in skate parks. I was never interested in trails. I was only interested in street handrails and ledges. And that was what was cool about New York at the time, is that nobody was riding skate parks or trails. Everybody was just riding fucking rails, stairs, whatever. And it was just.
But they don't do any of that at X Games. I guess
they do now. Yeah.
They can't really shut down.
Well, they'll like ride like the skate park course, but like it's different now because street as a style of BMX is so popular that it has like its own section in the X Games, but that wasn't the case at the time. Mm. So I never really like the whole idea of like going pro or whatever. Never like I didn't grow up around anyone who was pro. It never even occurred to me. And in reality, like in BMX, you pretty much have to be like a huge, massive name to be able to earn enough money to even make a living, you know. Right. It's like it's not really that lucrative. It's more of like a labor of love, you know.
Who had didn't the Diplomats have a team?
Dip Skate. Yeah, they never did BMX. I would have loved it if they did. There's like a video, if you search Dip Skate from like 2006 on YouTube, of these guys, and they're just ridiculous. Yeah, totally over the top.
Somebody else had a I think Young Money has a skating team now because of Wayne.
Oh, gotcha.
Really?
What brings you to LA from New York, or did you go home first?
I was living in New York for all those years, and at a certain point I just kind of realized like there's not a lot like holding me down here. Like I have friends here, but they're not necessarily like, I don't have like a huge network of friends that I like, you know. There wasn't anything holding me back. I was like, I love the nice weather. I'm kind of sick of New York. I kind of don't want to live in this fucking rat race anymore. I figured I would just give it a try and move to Long Beach, I moved out there with like a shitload of my friends at the same time, and we just got this
on a whim.
I mean, there was like a couple of months of planning, but it was basically like I wasn't established that much in New York to the point where like me moving to California was basically like, all right, my lease is over. I'm gonna pack up like 3 cardboard boxes and send them to Long Beach, pick them up, and then we all got like a big flop house, and it was basically just like drug fueled insanity for a few years in Long Beach for like me and my whole crew. So it was just not like specifically drug fueled, but like everybody just getting drunk. A few different times I compared it to like more like living in a public park than living in a home, because anybody could just walk in and just do whatever. That got old after a couple of years, but you know, we were wilding out during that time.
But you always had a place to sleep there.
Yeah, and I got like really big, like strong, like doorknobs that I could lock, and that made a big difference.
Sort of
yeah.
like fucks up the whole commune vibe, though. It's like, it yeah, like did, anything yeah. is like yours, that's mine or whatever, and it's just like, and you, well, I'm gonna live in my own room.
Yeah, yeah, because like, I would lock myself in there, but I would just be losing my mind when like people would walk in and think it was all good, because the room situation was sort of like a loop around the house with all the different rooms, so you could kind of like. People would just walk through my room thinking it was part of the house if they hadn't lived there for that long. So it was rough. And
did
we also had a cat
hallway?
That would pee on things a lot. No, I didn't live. I had the cat. Big room, but the cat would pee on things.
Yeah. No litter boxes in this.
No, there were, but he would just ignore them from time to time. Yeah.
How many bathrooms were there?
2. But like one of them didn't work like almost the entire time.
So that's why the cat was going to the bathroom.
You could
like,
urinate yeah, in there, yeah. but you couldn't do much else. Yeah.
Was there a shower there?
There was a shower that actually had hot water on one side, and then the other side was cold water. And there was such competition for showers at some points that you would just compromise and just go with the cold shower, which is weird because we probably could have just called the landlord and got the hot water turned on, but we never really took
your
it that far.
Your landlord also might have been like, oh, there's a million people living here.
Yeah, yeah. That was weird. Yeah.
I remember I was living in Boston at school, and like I lived in like a fine house. It was a fire trap. I mean,
what school did you go to in Boston?
BU.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Go Terriers. I was living in this place, and I remember the heat had shut off this one day. And so we called the landlord. And the landlord comes in. He's like, oh, well, and by the way, like, I'm trying to, like, write a paper with, like, a giant winter jacket on, like hunched over my desk. And he was like, well, the reason that the heat isn't working is because you guys need to clean up. And it's like, well, first of all, that's not even true.
That doesn't,
second
yeah.
of all, like, our apartment is not messy at all. And then he went into one of my roommate's rooms that had, like, the radiator or whatever. He twisted a few knobs, closed the door, and then my roommate came home a few hours later thinking that this was fixed. And he opens his door, and there's just oil just shooting out of the radiator, like, all over his shit.
Wow.
For, like, 6 hours.
6 hours?
Yeah. So it was, like, a very oily room.
That's amazing.
Did you end up graduating from college?
No. I went for 2 years, and I dropped out because all the scamming was going so profitably right. for me.
Right. You were like, well, you know, I can't major in this.
Yeah. So I might as well take it into my own hands.
So when you moved out to L.A. and you're living in Long Beach, mm-hmm. what's that like lifestyle like? Like, what's your daily sort of, you know, to-do list?
It was great because it was, like, very laid back. Like, wake up, hop in the van, go around filming and riding with my friends all day, every day. And that was pretty much it. And then come back at night, drink, smoke, fucking go out with my friends, go to the bars. We had girls coming back every night. That time period in my life was just really... just laid back and fun. It was pretty sick, yeah.
What age is this about?
So I was probably...
Your early 20s?
This is about 5 years ago, so I guess I was like 27 or so.
Okay.
You know?
That's a good time.
Life was good during that time period, but then I kind of like... When I moved to LA was when I got like a lot more serious. That's when we opened the shop. That's when I started really podcasting hard. Now, like, my life feels like, you know, intense, like doing things all the time, always working on something. But back then it was very
well. Yeah. So what's the switch that makes you want to open a brick and mortar store when you were just sort of like laying out and riding around? And
yeah, I don't know. I just felt like I wasn't really being productive. I wasn't actually, you know, I went through a really bad breakup at one point, and it really sort of like, it was the first girl that I had really gotten like into at that time in my life. And when she broke up with me, it actually like affected me like in a way that I had never really been affected by like a girl breaking up with me before, because I had kind of like, you know, moving somewhere for the first time, and you sort of start to, you know, someone who's from there, they're kind of helping you like find out all about LA. I got very attached to her. And then when she broke up with me, it kind of like fucked with my self-confidence to the point where I started really like questioning everything. And then all of a sudden my lifestyle of just going riding and hanging out every day didn't really seem good enough. And at that point I got like a lot more serious about like what I really wanted to accomplish in my life. I started to be like, well, I want a fucking store. I want like a physical manifestation of like my brand and BMX and everything like that. I knew that I wanted to do podcasts. I was like a big Joe Rogan fan even at the time. And I was like, I know that I can do this and like represent like underground hip hop or just like internet level hip hop, as well as like BMX and all these different people that I was interested in. So I don't know, moving to LA and like just kind of all of a sudden I wasn't around all these people that like just wanted to party. Like Long Beach is very laid back. Like LA is much more like you're kind of expected to be working, you know?
Yeah. Did you ever surf?
Oh, I never surfed a day in my life. In fact, the whole time I lived in California, I've maybe been to the beach like 5 times, and I've maybe been in the water like half of one time. So I like knowing that it's there, but I don't understand people who wake up in the morning and are like, oh, I'm going to go have fun. I'm going to go like just sort of hang out. Like, that doesn't really add up to me. It's like, I want to produce when I even going bike riding or whatever. That's like, it still feels like I'm being productive. You know, we're out doing stuff. We're filming stuff.
You know
stuff,
that there's zero difference between those two things.
No, but like we're out there filming. We're making videos for YouTube, that this is all part of the business. Like for me, it's like, yeah, it conceivably could be like the most relaxing thing you could do, to go lay out in the sun, in the sand. You get to go in the water. You get to go back, lay out more. You get a tan. You're probably with some girls. That sounds great. Never in my life have I ever woke up and been like, oh, I just want to chill out. Like, right. No, I want to get something done, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like the beach, but that's just because I'm Jewish.
Neurotic, yeah.
Like,
actually,
I don't do well.
My favorite podcast, The Great Debates, they debated the beach is fun, which was I thought was great. Like, yeah. You know, it's really like there's a lot of good arguments to be made either way.
Oh, we just had Rocky Fresh on the podcast, by the way.
Did you?
Saying,
wow.
Yeah, and MMG. He was saying that that – sneezing is way better than coughing, and I was like, I don't even think that's true.
Sneezing is
if you were to
sneezing feels
one,
good.
That's what he said. He said
it does like kind of right. Yeah, yeah.
You're How relieved. Is it any better than coughing?
Coughing is like a sign of sickness. I don't know that sneezing has ever really like amounted to like.
Yes, it is.
It no, does. Well, you, no, you probably
you're
know a lot more.
Of like this, like. You know, constant, you know, big sneeze. Right. Like, maybe you just, like,
when I smoke too many blunts out. And I'm coughing, like, that's my body telling me, you have smoked too much. You need to chill out. You know, if
I
sneeze,
I do too much,
it's like
cocaine and I start sneezing, then.
I've never really noticed,
never
like, a
coke.
Oh, really? Oh, you got to try it. It's great. Yeah. No, but I've never noticed, like, a cocaine sneezing connection, really.
I have no idea. I know there's a bloody nose connection to yeah. cocaine.
I'm not like a big coke user, but like when I have done it, it doesn't seem really conducive to sneezing.
So when you opened up your store.
I'm not a doctor, by the way.
It's good to know.
So when you opened up your store, you've only been in this one location, right?
Yeah, 2 years, 2.5 years now.
And it's located in downtown Los Angeles.
Right on the edge of Skid Row, like downtown LA, but very close to Skid Row.
Like,
right.
Super close, like literally across the street.
Well, let's go over some of the good things first. Big space.
Big space.
It's pretty good, yeah.
I like the way it looks. The storefront's very
I
cool.
Like the name.
Appreciate
the
that.
Name is awesome.
On some shit at yeah. on some shit on Twitter and Instagram. Thank
when
you.
When you walk in and you look up and left, you see a giant poster of Gucci.
Gucci
Mane,
free Gucci, which Coach K was very excited about.
Okay, so number one, and you told us this in person, but how do you get your name on some shit on that wall?
I think you open a store in downtown LA where they're thirsty for business. The cops have much bigger things to worry about. They just don't say anything. You're there for 2.5 years. Everybody just gets used to it. I don't know. Like we were totally planning from, because the sign we have now that like actually lights up, we used to just have like more of like a vinyl sign on the window, and nobody ever said anything about that, and it said the same thing. So we were kind of emboldened. Like we have talked about replacing the I with an exclamation point if anyone ever gives us a hard time. I know, I agree, it would be super lame, but we would still be able to have a sign. Mm-hmm. But I mean, no, it hasn't come to that yet. So
it's awesome.
Yeah,
America.
Also, there's a great picture that you have of Regis Philbin.
Yes, my friend Scott Marceau, who is a videographer and photographer that we work with, the Come Up. He was invited along with Tyrone Williams, who's a legendary pro BMX rider from out here, who owns a shop called Da Shop in downtown Manhattan. He appeared on the Regis Philbin show. Regis said to Scott, "He said, like, let me see your bike. I want to ride this thing." So he takes a couple pedals on it, and Scott managed to get this amazing photo of Tyrone, who's been riding BMX every day for like 20 plus years, as well as Regis, presumably his first time on a BMX bike, and he just looked like it was the time of his life. So that photo, we put it on a shirt. That was just legendary.
Regis does strike me as more of a dip skate guy, or you know,
yeah,
you know,
I don't
mountain
know,
bike maybe.
I don't know where his preference lies. Old fuck, yeah.
But so you had Coach K, who is a legendary manager in this business.
That was
and
crazy.
Was Gucci's manager? Was Jeezy's manager?
It was really. It was a little
Yachty.
Yeah, he was a little Yachty interview, and like. I was glad that Coach K sat in on it, not only because that gives us some clout because he's a legend, but also because Lil Yachty is very young and does not form that many full sentences. So Coach K was able to like maybe help express the value of Lil Yachty in a way that Lil Yachty was not able to express about himself. I was texting him today, and he actually said, he's like, man, they be hating on me. And he's like, I'm just a regular guy. Yeah. I'm like, you're not a regular guy anymore. You got to get over that stupid train of thought. Yeah.
So Coach comes in and he looks up at that poster and
just was in awe. Yeah. Amazing. He just couldn't believe it. And I said to him, I'm like, you know, I was saying, you know, you can see Waka Flocka in the background of that freestyle video wearing the shoulder strap backpack. And Coach K said, yeah, well, Gucci had some bars in that freestyle for me. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, because we didn't work together at the time. That was when I was just Jeezy's manager.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah. Yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah, Gucci had a whole lot of bars for me over the years. I'm like, that must be so cool to, like, know who Gucci's talking about in all these songs, like, yeah, what the subliminals are, you know?
Amazing.
Very, very jealous of that.
Wait, who's your audience?
My audience for the podcast?
For all of it. I mean, like, because you've had your blog, you've had your podcast, and I feel like you weirdly have this audience of, like, mostly, like, young teens who have found you.
Underground rap fanatics pretty much is, like, a big one. And, like, that's what I love about podcasting is that every single time you do it, you get a different chance to spread out and get, like, I had the Maxo Cream interview. Like, we hadn't had, like, a super traditional down south gangster rapper like that in such a way. I was so hyped to get that one. Lil Yachty, you know, he's obviously bringing in this whole weird Atlanta like fan base and like young kids on the internet. I mean, I like interviewing all kinds of different people that have their own different space on the internet. Like, we've interviewed Instagram models, like, in the sense like that's actually how they make a living,
right?
Porn stars.
But then you also interview people like Lil Puya or like
Puya. He doesn't have a little.
I don't
but
know.
That I he's you very little. He's little. Yeah.
who is the kid who
John Ross
threatened to sue you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just talked about it in the Hypebeast interview. They didn't threaten to sue me. Just John Ross didn't want his interview to be up anymore. Him and Young Weej, and I basically just said, no, I'm not taking it down unless you sue me or get a lawyer. And then that was it. And he's just salty. I seen Ian Connor at a South by Southwest event the other day, which that was like the big interview that kind of blew us up at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no jumper. And I was like, what's up? You mad at me? And because he had tweeted like a lyric from this one dude's song that said something like, fuck no jumper. I'm like, what's up, Ian? You mad at me? And he's like, I ain't mad at you, but my boys is like, my little boys said you were op. I'm like, oh, well. Yeah, we gotta work through that, you know. But I don't think Ian gives a shit.
See,
I think he
nice,
knows what's going on.
Isn't it nice to know whose bars are coming at you? Like,
yeah. Oh yeah, it was cool. I mean, I don't fucking I love the negative attention just as much as the positive. It's more real. You
do
know?
Do you sense that the podcast is bringing people to your shop?
Oh, totally. Because kids come in all the time who are super bummed because they think that I'm sitting back there all day every day. Yeah, like we get tons of people coming in who find out about the clothing line, about BMX in general. I get messages on the No Jumper DMs every day being like, what kind of bike should I buy? I just got into BMX because of your podcast, blah, blah, blah. Like, to me, it's like I just want to be an advocate and a representative for BMX. So, I mean, that's just like a huge part of me. I'm more of like a BMX rider than I am a hip-hop fan, even though that's a huge part of my life too. So to be able to like expose that and make it look good and show that it's a cool subculture to kids who aren't fully informed, I mean, that's like the best thing I could ever hope for.
Is it too late for me to get into BMX?
I don't see a lot of people get into it at an older age. It's just
fine.
It doesn't
21.
Happen that way. Very few people I've seen in my life who get into BMX at an older age. That's probably part of what holds it back. Like, you probably could become like an all right snowboarder at this point in your life. Probably much less likely for you to become like a BMX guy. I don't know.
I also had a terrible experience skiing, so I don't think that's
going
to work for snowboarding.
Yeah. I see older people get into snowboarding and stuff, but they just don't seem like they get into BMX or even skateboarding at like an older age.
No.
It's too painful. It's such a young man's sport, you know?
Yeah.
Who are some of the people who hang out outside your shop?
Oh, wow.
Oh, well.
Jeez, I'd like to give a shout out to my man Godbody, who I was actually thinking last time I saw Tax Stone on an interview or something, I thought to myself, if Tax Stone got on crack and lost like 40 pounds, he would really kind of look like this one bum that hangs out by my shop named Godbody. There's a guy that we call Recycle Man who's just really into recycling. He's always seeing if
like
you
76 Poland Spring bottles in the back of his Buick.
Yeah, he has he got them Poland Springs bottles. Yeah. And actually kind of sad because like he sleeps in this alley near our store, and one of my business partners saw him like laying on the ground kind of like kibbying out with a fucking heroin needle hanging out of his arm. So like I mean, and anybody that you think is kind of funny around like Skid Row, downtown LA, like funny homeless guy, very rarely does it seem funny for long, because then at some point you get to see them like...
Yeah, no, it's all horrible.
Yeah, yeah,
do you,
yeah.
Is downtown LA a lot different when the sun's out than it is when the sun's down?
Yeah, it's pretty like safe, and like you see a lot of crazy shit during the day, but then at night, like recently I was going to hang out with this girl and she gave me her address and it was like East 5th Street, but... for whatever reason, my Google thing thought it was West 5th Street. And I was basically just like, I ain't walking there. Like, even me, like, I can't walk in that fucking direction this time of night. Like, there's no way. I was actually started doing the walk, and then luckily she texted me back. She's like, no, you dumbass, it's this one. I'm like, oh, thank fucking God. I'm like, I did not want to walk through there, man.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's – and I've actually had – well, you know what sucks is when there's fog, because all the piss and shit – just rises up into vapor, and you don't even want to leave the store or your car or whatever, because it's just in your face. It's the worst thing I could ever
imagine. But isn't there a whole initiative to like make to clean up downtown LA?
But what do you do with 30,000 fucking homeless people, you know?
30,000.
Something like that. Holy it's a shit. Huge number, and like there's kids in there. There's and for every like scumbag that's like out there like harassing women and like running around acting super crazy, bothering you, there are like families that live in tents there and don't bother anybody, and but they have nowhere else that they can go. So it's weird being in downtown LA, because you're constantly dealing with like the everyday annoyance of just crazy ass people, but then also thinking like there is nothing that our government could possibly do to deal with this problem. Like, what the fuck could they do? Like, you know, what do you do? I don't know.
Do you know any of your neighboring stores?
Yeah, right across from us, there's a tattoo shop that used to be called Crimson Unicorn, and it has a new name. It's like it's something different, but there's a guy named Cole who runs that, and that's pretty cool. Right next to us is King Eddie's, which is a bar that is it's very historic because it was around during the Prohibition era. Whoa. And if you go into the basement, they'll actually show like, well, they won't show the average person, I don't think, but they showed us one time they have like all the paintings of like the dudes running barrels of alcohol from there to the police station is painted down there, because there was so much corruption during Prohibition, I guess. But King Eddie's is dope. And also, if you ever use the bathroom at the OSS store, you will be able to hear the conversation that is taking place in the women's bathroom at any given time. I've heard after hours, I've heard the employees having sex.
Whoa.
I've heard girls having like weird coked out conversations, like just attacking each other about things that like don't make any sense. So, you know, I'll go to take a shit at like 1 o'clock in the morning when I'm like working at the store, and I'll sit there for a couple minutes and hear the craziest conversations I've
That's
ever heard.
That's wild.
That's pretty cool.
That's what you should charge for.
I want a peephole in there. Yeah. Well, what was like Saved by the Bell. I will also like to say that there's a burger restaurant right like a half a block away from us that just kind of opened, and they have a burger called the Danish that is the best burger I might have ever had in my life. Nobody else seems to know about it. I fully plan on vlogging about it in the near future.
Yes.
But fantastic sandwich. Also, EDM-based clothing line called Massive that opened across the street from us, and we outlived them.
Nice.
So I'm very proud to say that we outlived the EDM. The hip-hop, at least for the time being, seems to have trumped EDM.
Yes.
We did it.
Before we go, can you tell us your best story from going to Europe?
From going to Europe, oh man, I got stories that make me seem like a pussy. I got stories that make me seem like the biggest asshole ever. I got stories that make me sound like, oh God, I got to just figure out which one to hone in on.
Well, you've been to Europe a bunch.
Yeah, I'll just tell you an embarrassing one. Is that last time I was in Brighton, England, is so I'm with my friend Caleb Kwanbeck and this dude Joe Tech, who works for this bike company called 70s, a.k.a. Federal, out of there. And they had basically rented this big house in Brighton, and they just had all the different riders that ride for this team come through. And me and Joe Tech and Caleb, we all take certain drugs and go to the bar with these three girls. It was just a little bit of Molly, you know. I don't feel too bad about saying that we're on a little bit of Molly. That's not too bad, right?
Right.
So we go, but it's important that you know that for the story. So we go to one bar, we hang out, we have one drink, and then we go to the next bar. But along the walk, we just stop on a corner and we're all kind of talking about what bar we're going to go to next. It's a little kid, like 16, 17-year-old kid with his eyes all fucked up. He looks like he's on heroin. He comes up to one of the girls in our little crew and he says like, hey, you little fucking whore, or something like that, something super rude. And Caleb is a big tough guy, well, but kind of understandable in this situation. Caleb goes, why don't you sit your ass down, or I'm going to sit you down, bro. Like, and the fucking kid goes, oh, yeah, you're going to sit me down. boom, there's like 20 fucking kids all that were sitting against the wall that are with him. So all of a sudden, it's me, Caleb, and Joe Tech, and we're fighting like 20 kids. The girls are getting hit by these dudes, like, and there's like girls in their squad. They're chasing after us. We're like running down the street, sort of like fighting them as we run. We're kind of trying to get to like an area where there's like security or whatever, because this is like, it's like, have you heard the hypothetical of like how many kindergartners could I fight at the same? It was like that. Yeah. Like, and so we're just going to war, like fighting these dudes. Caleb loses his shoe. I'm punching little kids in the face. We ended up kind of like the fight got closer to this bar, and like one of the fucking security guards was just like, I'm calling the cops. All the kids split up everywhere. We didn't really get to do shit about it, but
oh my God,
I wouldn't say we like lost the fight, but I fought more people than I've never been that overwhelmed. But it was weird because it's like every single kid in the group, I could have fucking flicked my finger and probably killed them. But there's 20 of them, so the whole dynamic was changed.
Yo, I'm never going back to Europe.
Just because of that, the whole continent is done.
Yeah. Yo, Adam, thanks so much for coming through.
Thank you, Jeff and Eric. I appreciate it. It's the Real Amazing Podcast. Check out my podcast, No Jumper, on YouTube, SoundCloud, and iTunes. And it's also on some shit on Twitter, as well as our store in downtown LA. I would appreciate anybody who wants to stop by. Hit
God
us up.
Godbody, whatever, yeah.
Godbody, fucking scumbag. Yeah.
Come see the bathroom.
That's yeah, right. Yeah. Come see the bathroom. Listen in. Have the girls next door having a conversation. And you can listen in.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Please, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, comment. Leave something nice for us. A lot of people have been leaving some nice comments. Leave some more. It doesn't hurt.
It never hurts. Just stuff the ballot box.
That's right. Please, go tell a friend about A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, which friend do you want to tell?
I want to tell my Facebook friend, my Snapchat friend, Marcus Strankowski, who every week, while he's driving from his job in Akron, Ohio, he lets me know that he's listening to A Waste of Time with It's The Real. He shows a video of the actual radio playing it.
That's a real fan.
And
real fan.
Yeah. And I watch it, and I recognize my voice, and I'm like, oh, that's our podcast. This is going to seem very weird for him, listening to Marcus Strankowski come out of the radio.
I just want him.
I'm filming him.
I want. Oh, you're going to film this?
I'm going to Akron.
Oh, my God. This is very, like, Inception right now. I want to tell our friend Lenny S. Lenny, go tell your friend DJ Khaled, because then Khaled can tell his 6 million teenage followers to follow It's The Real. So you can find us at It's The Real, not at The Real Real.
Yeah, fuck The Real Real.
Actually, here's what we can do. We can ask Khaled for $20.90. Then we can help that person out, and then we're good people, right?
Yeah. Also, I want Khaled to say fuck The Real Real.
Fuck The Real Real. On his snap.
Yeah.
And then the evidence will just disappear after 24 hours.
No, but it lives on forever.
Ah. You want to do this again next week?
I do. I need to tell somebody that doesn't listen to our podcast to listen to our podcast next week.
No, but everyone should tell friends. Tell friends who tell friends who tell friends. We could be friends.
Yeah. Let's do this next week.
All right.